Blog Talk Radio.
Sharing is a virtue. Show folks where you stand. Lend a hand when you can to your fellow man. Over plan for the day when you can work the way you used to.
I want all my people around.
For my brother, what I want for myself. I want for my sis, what I want for my mother.
That's
was an undercover thugger trying to get to the wealth, to the thug life. Put my brother undercover.
Damn.
Now one of us gotta be around for the love of her. Turn my life around and what's real love to others. I'm the one serving you facts, was the one serving you butters. Please be mindful with some Judas to the mother.
Let's go.
All my people.
I want all my people around.
Good morning.
I apologize for the delay. I was trying to dial in, but glad to be here this morning.
Amen. Well, thank you. Welcome everybody to the PRF table. This is your host, Dr. Nate Dunlap, and we are here for another exciting episode of Financial Empowerment 2019. Today, we are honored and blessed to have with us somebody who I have known for a little while, but I respect her for the things that she's done and the things that she's going to do. And so we have with us none other than Stephanie Hicks. Stephanie Hicks is a support forum facilitator at the Offender Alumni Association in Birmingham, Alabama. So we'll greet you that way, my sister. Good morning to you, or good afternoon over here in on the East Coast time, and welcome to our show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I appreciate being able to share with you this morning.
Awesome. So listen, what we're going to try to do, I'm going to try to give everybody just a little bit of a background of where we are on this topic, and we're going to try to do something creative. I'm going to try to do some Facebook Live at the same time. So here's where we are.
a couple of, for those who haven't been with us for the whole time period, we've been embarking on this journey of financial empowerment for 2019. And the reason that the title of the show is Plus 2019 is really because what we're trying to teach people, what we're trying to give as far as people to glean from, is not necessarily just about this year. And Stephanie, I've said this before, a lot of times there are some individuals that will stand in the pulpit on Sunday morning, or they'll stand in the pulpit on New Year's Eve, and they'll talk about all that God is going to do for you in 2019. Last year they said in 2018 on New Year's Eve, and going back however long I can recall being a part of the church. And then I keep thinking about it. When do we ever get to the point of trying to find out what did or did not work during that coming year, instead of telling people that they're going to get more if they haven't done the work? And so I know from talking to you and all of our conversations that there's some work that you put in, and that you will be a very good person to be with us on today, to help us to deal with what it really looks like for individuals sometimes that are left in the margins, sometimes that are left to the side. And so if you can just give us a little bit of background about who you are and what you do over there at up there in Birmingham, we greatly appreciate it, because I want people to understand that we have somebody that's in the trenches and fighting for especially a certain demographic of people.
Okay. First, to start off, I like to tell people that I'm a mother, I'm a veteran, I've been a federal employee in my career for 15 years, and I have been to prison. I'm a formerly incarcerated individual, spent 6 months in federal prison in 2016, and came out that same year, and trying to come out of that situation to be able to be stable. It's very difficult. It's not unusual for anyone that has been convicted of a felony, because we do know there are some who don't go to prison that tend to have the same challenges. And trying to be stable is a survival mode that you have to get into, because there are limited jobs, there are limited housing because of your background. There's limitations on people who want to assist you based on the crime that you committed. So in saying that, I have seen just a multitude of people that have the sheer will to be successful but do not have the avenues to be successful. And a lot of that has to do with their financial capacity. What I've experienced with particular people that have been in a number of years, and we're going to say the Decades Club, the ones that have been in 10 years or more, there is a relearning of how to think about earning money and developing income streams. So all those dynamics come into it when you're trying to come out of that situation where you were dependent on the state and your families for whatever money they could send you, to coming out here and having to completely try to take care of yourself in some untenable situations.
One of the things that you said I really want to, I guess, really hone down on is the part about what you said about limitations. And when I think about limitations, I want everybody to know, and you can come behind if you want, but I want individuals to know that this conversation that we're having, this dialogue, only to empower people. See, I just believe, I've never been to prison, Stephanie, but I know some individuals that have, and because I teach criminal justice and personal law, I'm familiar with and have partnerships with individuals in the correctional side of the criminal justice system. We're not going to focus on all of the limitations today. I do want us to focus on the fact that we're acknowledging that they're out there. And so I want us to try to come up with maybe a couple of solutions, a couple of things that could be transformative in somebody's life. And the reason I want to do that is when you mention there's a relearning that needs to happen, I also think about sometimes individuals have not learned certain things. So
correct.
If you never learn something, you can't relearn anything. And the other side of that relearning coin is sometimes we as individuals in society have learned some of the wrong things. We believe certain individuals that say do this and do that, but then when you go and try it, you don't realize that, oh, my goodness, here comes the limitations. A lot of times people want to make things look easier than what they are. And we want to say, it's not easy. So let me ask you this, because I just again, we're just having a conversation. Where it goes, it goes. You mentioned housing and employment. And so with those two areas by themselves, how in the world can we ever expect anybody who has done done their time and is now out, or done their time and is about to get out, how can we ever expect them to be financially empowered, knowing that housing and employment are the two of the most common barriers facing individuals that are coming out of prison?
And I'm glad you honed in on those two, because one of the things, well, there are several things that you know, create this perfect storm of, you know, trying to get ahead and feeling like you're stuck. The aspect of someone coming out, well, let's go back to the person that's in. If you have someone that went in based on maybe drug crimes where they were, you know, doing trafficking, selling, all of those type things, you know, theft of property, you know, the credit card fraud, those are crimes that I call hustle crimes. And the reason why I call them hustle crimes, because those people, there was no rhyme or reason per se as to how to do something. It was living in the moment of doing whatever it was to be done, correct? So that gives them that idea of hustle. There's no structure to that. So when you have someone go in and that's all they did when they come out, their mind has already been trained to, how I get money is that I have no structure in it. I just got to go out here and get it. So having to teach people there is a way to access and be successful in having financial stability, it is a process. And that's where I do believe, even with me, there has been a situation where I wasn't able to be in the process. I look at all of the aspects of what someone who's coming out have to deal with, because some people end up going to live with family. Now, if you have been away from your family for an extended period of time and you come in, you're like an outsider coming in. And guess what? You're another dependent. And you're dependent on a family household that may not have been financially secure before you came, and now that's adding that stress. So that's another stress that happens that causes you to fall into that mode of I'm stuck. Now, we've seen it a lot of different times, and we try to recommend people to find another outside support system. Some people go into these transitional homes. In Alabama, they are very treacherous, because what they do is they will, before you even enter into that home, if you decide to go there, you're already behind, because they want maybe $400 or $500 as a fee for you being there and a weekly fee for you to pay. Now, you don't have the opportunity to that breathing moment to come home and say, how do I need to start? What do I need to do? If you have a college student graduating from college with a degree and they have to take a moment to sit down, okay, where's my next footing? Just imagine somebody coming from prison, because college is a great thing on a resume.
Right.
Somebody coming home from prison with gaps in their employment that they have to explain, these are the times I was in prison. That's a challenge. So there's no breathing time for them to figure out how can I get financially secure and stable. So in particular, when I was in prison dreaming about, okay, when I get out, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this, and it's going to fall in line, and that's not the reality. I am somebody who has a master's and a bachelor's, and I had difficulty finding a job. So just imagine,
wow.
And with 15 years federal experience, and we're not talking about the other companies I worked for prior to then, I had difficulty finding a job. So somebody with no skills, particularly with our young men that are coming home that went in when they were 17, coming home now that they're 30, and they're tatted up, it's that perception, that look at them, I don't know if I want to hire you. So there are all those dynamics. And what people, and I think this is not the average person, but it's that holier-than-thou person that thinks, okay, now you did your time, come home, now you should be able to get out here and be a productive citizen. If you're not giving me an opportunity to be able to create that financial security for me to be a productive citizen, how can I be successful? And I'm not talking about being rich. I'm talking about being able to maintain a stable household where all my bills are met, where I have food and taking care of the needs that I need to take care of. We're not talking about being, you know, rich. And I do believe that particularly in our community, we have a love-hate relationship with money to some degree. Sometimes some of us have not learned how money works. I'm going to tell you, my father, he was somebody that was big on credit. He always was big on credit. He would not, this is how he operated. He'll tell us, you can leave all these lights on if you want to. He said, you're going to be eating Alabama Power because I'm going to pay that power bill first. That was what was in his mind.
Sounds like my guy
to
God.
I used to hate to hear that when I was a child, when I was a teenager, but I understand now. And that's something that we have to instill in those who are coming home. The most baffling thing that I learned was people that are incarcerated tend to sell their identity to people on the street so that their credit can be used, and they're getting maybe $200 or more. And I've heard more and more of this. I think Dr. Nate, I heard it from you first, and then I questioned somebody. I was like, yeah, I need to do it all the time. And so now we have that added piece of somebody's identity is being taken because of the fact they needed $200 to maintain their toiletries, whatever the case may be, in prison. So that's another obstacle coming out of prison that you have. So in trying to prepare somebody for coming home, in Alabama, because I can only speak to Alabama, in Alabama they're not preparing people to come home. They're preparing to get them out the system. So if you're not preparing them, and when we say prepare, you need to be touching these individuals at least 6 months before they're coming out. What's your game plan? Where are you going to live? Like, they have to, you know, have a report in place where they're going to be living, this, that, and other. You need to be able to prepare them. Okay, these are places where you can go in and look to see if you can get a job. We know these are former offender-friendly employers. None of that is being done. So we expect these people to come out of prison. And I know when I came out of federal prison in Alabama, they didn't even give me release papers. And I spoke to another gentleman. He said, I didn't get release papers either. But he got a card with $10 on it and a bus ticket to wherever he was supposed to be going. How can we expect financial security on that? So I think that a lot of people tend to think, okay, you put yourself in this situation. Okay, yeah. You put yourself in this situation. You can explain away some of the things, this, that, and other, but most people take, you know, responsibility for whatever they did. But does that mean that I'm less than able to have a way to be able to be stable? Because what I tell people, okay, if you think people should be continually punished for some crimes that they did, how safe will our society be? Because we know poverty will make people do things they wouldn't normally do to survive. So survival is where we don't want the people coming home to be in survival mode. We want them to be in building mode. And we can't do that if we haven't prepared them to be able to be looking at, what do I need to do to be financially secure and also to be able to help those family members that help me? Because we know that poverty is not just a single dynamic for that person that's in prison. It's for the family members too.
Oh, my goodness. And here we are with a 30-minute show talking with all of this. We're going to have to get you back on the show because there is so much more. We're going to be doing some things, and we've already started, but I just had to get you on so we can have this conversation. Somebody can hear this voice because we're talking about financial empowerment for 6 months. So from January to June is how long we'll be talking about this, and this guy says to go a little bit further. But it's amazing how it's easy when I have topics like this, or God gives us topics like this, how people will only think about themselves. How do I get myself and get to where I'm able to be, where I can do this? And I'm like, nah. See, Jesus did say, love thy neighbor as thyself. He did say, love ye one another. And so that means it's not all about what we do for ourselves. It's about what do we do for our neighbors. And so I'm going to throw this out here because I like to ask questions. And if we don't ask questions, we don't give answers. The financial empowerment, and it's a statement, but it's a question in here somehow. But financial empowerment, as I'm seeing it, of the formerly incarcerated, I say it starts with the church. This is me. This is me, Dr. Donlat Rev, whatever. This is me saying it. It starts with the church. Here's why I say that. When such and such got locked up, grandmama came to church and said, my baby boy got locked up. My baby girl got locked up. They locked them up. You know, sometimes it ain't about what they was doing, right? It's about what the system did, right? So they in prison. They got locked up. And so then what we know the church often does is, I know this, is we going to pray for grandma such and such who was doing her best to raise that boy while, you know, because mom and dad is no longer in the picture. Or because we're going to pray for the mother, right? We're going to do that too. And then while they were in, listen, we're going to keep praying for sister such and such or brother such and such, you know, who can stand on the wall for whoever it is that's connected to them that's in prison, right? And then we pray for that individual while they're in prison as well. We hear those things. So back to my statement, financial empowerment of the formerly incarcerated starts with the church. All the vigor and the energy that was put into doing for this individual while they were in, how in the world does it stop once they're out?
Thank you. And can I elaborate on that? Because let me tell you what my ideology has been. I'm currently still unemployed. But I have not missed a beat on my needs being met. And because my mindset is this, if I take care of God's people, God will take care of me because he trusts me to do what he's entrusted me to do. So I may not have, you know, the things that I think I want, but I have everything that I need. So when I see little old me out here with sometimes barely $2 in her pocket, out here in the trenches trying to make sure that I'm being a light, I'm helping, I'm connecting people with whatever I know how to connect them with. And we see mega churches that are not putting out that same effort. And I'm not trying to down the church, but what I'm saying is there takes a full community effort to increase the peace in our communities, to increase the stability in our communities, to make sure that the next generation that's coming up will see positive examples of charity among their communities. And that's where we're missing the mark. That's where we're missing the mark. You can't have peace when there's overwhelming poverty. You can't have increased peace when there are people who don't know when their next meal is coming through. The saddest thing and that I had seen, young lady, she's applied for disability, and you know how long that takes. She applied for disability, and she's blind in one eye, and almost she's legally blind in one eye and going blind in the other. So there's an inability to be able to work. She had went to her church that she's a member of and ask them for assistance because her lights had been off. Her water bill was $1,400. Okay.
Goodness.
The pastor told her, and this is coming directly from her and the person that went with her to ask for help. Well, I could write you the check, but, you know, you ain't living the way God intends for you to live, because she was living with a man in the house who has similar disabilities and they're not married. So you helping me is determining on how you feel about how I'm living in my house. That's an opportunity for you to help me and evangelize me. Because, see, we can't antagonize and evangelize in the same breath. It just ain't possible.
Come on now.
It ain't possible.
That's right. That's right. So here's what I would say. One of the things, because, you know, we like to put some meat to it. One of the things that I will say for every pastor, every one of my, my colleagues, the number one thing that a church as a community of loving, caring folks, the number one thing that a pastor who said, God called me to lead sheep, can do is to do what you've already said. Make sure that there is a list of felon-friendly employers that is always made available. Not when somebody gets out of prison, not grandma such-and-such's nephew who just got out of prison, and then he's like, hey, Pastor Dade, I need some help. And nah, I'm talking about that needs to be on bulletin boards. It needs to be in those doggone wasted bulletins that you give on Sunday morning to the people who ain't paying attention to what's going on because they're reading stuff on the bulletin. It needs to be on the church's website. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to make sure as long as I can get the information, I'm going to make sure it's on the PRF ministry website, prfinstitute.org. I'm going to make sure it gets on there. Because if we don't put the information out there, that's the first step. First step is putting it out there, right, making it available. The second step is you got to be active with it, brothers and sisters. You have to actively put it out there that we know where the jobs are. Because the truth be told, listen, I know for a fact because of what I've done with Department of Community Supervision in Georgia that you got individuals coming to these day reporting centers and they're just trying to get anything. They're trying to get something to keep to keep the probation probation officers off their case. Look, you're out of jail, you got probation, you got to have a job. So they trying to get anything because as long as they're showing that they're doing something, but we know that they're not getting $17 and $30 an hour jobs.
No,
through the day report, that's not what they're getting. And so therefore, you can never those individuals are never financially empowered. Because they're oftentimes at a lower end of the economic ladder. So we give them, like I call them in my book, Don't Leave Me Like This, that's the low-hanging fruit. Let's deal with that piece. If you put that part out, then now we have something that we can send people to. We can say, you know what, I know First Baptist Church of Ensley has a list of felon-friendly employers. I know that church has it. And then you start putting the spotlight on the church because they're doing something. Now, you can't stop there. Now you have to go one step further and make sure that you have somebody that's keeping the list updated. Don't just put something out there and then it hasn't been updated in 2 years. That's why I haven't put out certain things on the PRF website because I got to make sure we have the personnel to actually handle those things. If there's one takeaway that I say for today is churches have a responsibility, get a doggone list, and if you don't want to do that, if that's not where you're at, then you should know who to send somebody to. See, it doesn't have to be your list. You don't have to create your own list, right? I know somebody in Georgia that is constantly putting out, this place is hiring, this place is hiring. And yes, it's in the Columbus, Georgia area, but can you imagine that if just five cities where we know have high crime, and we know that individuals have individuals coming back from the system, from being incarcerated. If we just did it in those five cities, and everybody just know, just go to this church's website, you can always find it because they're updated. That can be something that somebody, I tell you what, I like sometimes talking sometimes to myself because God will reveal. that's something that I can get an intern to do. I can get an intern to constantly be working when an intern comes work, a criminal justice intern or sociology intern comes with us for the summer in our internship program. That's one thing that I could have them doing, constantly making sure this is updated. If I can do it as a nonprofit organization, mm-hmm. you can't tell me that the church mm-hmm. can't do it.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
But then
listen.
The other part of that, too, is not just that low-hanging fruit. We need
okay.
to erase these judgmental eyes, because what ends up happening, and I know that a lot of formerly incarcerated individuals have said this, I want to go to church, but sometimes, you know, I went a few times and then, you know, they know my background and everything, you know, I don't feel comfortable. You don't, in order for people to be able to seek you for help, they have to feel like you want to help them. And
exactly.
see, that's another aspect of it, too. I don't think people realize how detrimental it can be, because there is a true stigma associated with incarceration, because some people that have gone don't want you to know. I choose to
right.
self-identify, but when you've been all on Facebook like I have in the news, you can't help but. But I
right.
choose to self-identify because I want somebody to see, hey, look, I did what I did. I paid for what I did. But you can't hold that against me. Once I've owned my story, you can't use it against me. But some people are not there. And so the slightest feeling of judgment, that's why when we have our support forums at OAA, it's an opportunity. It's a safe space where people can talk about those issues with someone that's been there and not feel like they're being judged. And that's where I think
right.
the church needs to give more. We have one of our support forums at a church in Birmingham, First Baptist Church, South Park. They have done monumental things with that support forum over there. Nobody feels like they're in a church. They feel like they're in a welcome space to talk about their issues. So that's what needs to happen across those churches. Somebody that's coming home should be able to feel just as comfortable walking in there as they would into a McDonald's or a Waffle House. So until we get there.
Mm-hmm.
Until we get there, we're still going to be in this cycle of how do we help? We got the tools, we just need to use them. They're real simple.
So let's do this. I know we're a couple of minutes over, but it's okay. I would love to know as many churches that you know don't have that evil attitude. I'm going to call it evil. Right, because if you're looking
mm-hmm.
at your brother or sister like you ain't never done nothing wrong, if you're looking at your brother or sister like you ain't done nothing wrong, like because they got caught and you didn't, all of us, something wrong
mm-hmm.
with that picture, that's evil, right? So I would love to know, Stephanie, you know, we can talk offline, but I would love to get a list of churches in the Birmingham area that don't have
mm-hmm.
that evil mindset, right? And we start with them.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing
mm-hmm.
I would say is any church that has what they call or are saying a prison ministry has
mm-hmm.
to be the type of prison ministry to be totally upfront and honest and say, listen, the only thing we're going to do is come in here and preach to you once a week or once a month. Be upfront and honest with the gentlemen. Be honest with the ladies when you go in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, see, the fact that I keep coming from Dunlap Church International Apostolic Ministries Incorporated, and I'm up in there I'm up in St. Clair every month.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, just maybe, when Brother X gets out, he gonna come to that church, and that's
yes.
not the time to say, you know what, we can't help you. That's not the time
mm-hmm.
to act like a little punk or a coward and say, well, you know, our church, you know, we really don't like the, you know, we do the prison ministry, but. You know, getting all involved, that's not really what we do. See, I'll be bold and say it. If you don't want to
yeah.
go all the way, don't do nothing. Now, if that's your only calling, if that's the way that God says, listen, all I want you to do is go into the four walls of the institution, and I want you to preach to them Jesus. That is
mm-hmm.
perfectly fine, my brothers and sisters. Just don't give them the impression that you're going to be there when they get out. Let them know
Amen.
This is all that God has called us to do. That way they're not looking. And then that way they don't have that type of disappointment. Because that's
mm-hmm.
part. That's how we deal with what you just mentioned. We take away
yeah.
all of these type of barriers, all of these facades, so that individuals know, listen, I know they were just coming in there to preach. Or I just know they was coming in there to have church service. I just know they were coming in there twice a year to do to do a conference. That's what you
mm-hmm.
do. And so, therefore, then you say, okay, well, who's the ones going to help them on the outside? They may not be going in the four walls of the institution,
mm-hmm.
but they're just waiting there. And so there has to be that connection between those who's going in to connect while they're in, as well as with those individuals going out. So the one individual has two groups of people that
yes.
can help them. One helped them
yes.
in one phase of their life, and now here we are, the next people, to help them in the next phase. So, Stephanie, listen, we got to run. This has been good. I want us to do a Facebook Live on this and just come back, and we got plenty more shows that we can do for, you know, this first or second quarter. So in our last couple of minutes, just give them whatever information that you want the people to have, any organizations, any other type of comments that you would have to encourage them, because we're going to get this going. We're going to get this going very, very soon to at least give somebody, some people, some individuals a clean start, because that's what they need. We need to give them a clean start so that they can be financially empowered. And the way that we teach here at PRF, listen, we have one of our lessons in our Credit Debtor First Cousins course. It's funny that you mentioned this about the identity theft, but I think when you and I first started talking last year was when we were developing this lesson, and it's called Protect Yourself from the Enemy of Identity Theft. And and that came out of, hold on, we got to do something with helping these individuals that keep becoming victims of identity theft. So if we don't teach them some of the ways that we know, and then they get caught up, and then they have problems on the outside because they've done this survival mode, this hustle mode. See,
yes.
somebody needs to be able to state it. And so, therefore, if you take this lesson on the inside, and then now you say, well, hold on, you went through PRF, and they came into the prison, and one of the facilitators came into St. Clair, and you took this Protect Yourself, and you still went and gave up your identity for $200?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, just maybe, you got to go through a little bit of a rough patch.
Because
see, you've caused that problem, right? And so now we got to deal with something else, not just trying to help you get a job. We got to deal with that mindset. And that goes back to me, what you said about these judgmental eyes. We got to help make sure that the people have the necessary tools to take those eyes off them so that they're looking at them in the right light. So I'll let the final comments be for you. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a wonderful, wonderful episode of the PRF Table. So take it away.
Well, the final comments that I have is I want everyone to take an opportunity to step out of yourself and look at a situation from that person's perspective, not from the past that they have been, but the journey they're getting ready to go on. If you are actually taking that process of looking through someone else's eyes, I guarantee you, you'll be moved to do something. You may not be able to do everything that Stephanie does, but your heart should move you to do something, because this is in our community. This is the future of our children, and we can create greater legacies than we're producing now. But thank you. I appreciate having the opportunity to share. I always want to be able to share with people so that they can understand that we're humanizing this target population, because they're humans just like anyone else.
Wow, what a wonderful show today. Listen, thank you so much again. We are definitely going to get you back, and, of course, we'll be working on some things behind the scenes to help this particular group of population of individuals. You know, I think about what Jesus said in my final comments in Matthew 25. You know, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When I was sick and in prison, you came and saw about me. Well, it goes beyond. I just believe that Jesus that I know would say that it goes beyond just coming to see somebody in prison. It goes mm-hmm. to this whole notion of what he was saying. Listen, when people need you, you need to help them. Now, the fact that he didn't say, when I was in prison, you came to see me, but then when I got out, when they get out, you came in. He ain't had to say all that. We know the right mm-hmm. thing to do. Anybody who mm-hmm. is marginalized, especially in this particular community that we live in, and we need to be the mm-hmm. ones that can actually do exactly what we can do to help. So, all right, we'll do this again. We'll do this again. I'm excited yes. about what's actually happening right now.
Yes, and I have something I'm going to send you offline.
Okay, sounds all good. Right. So for everybody else, listen, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining in. Those who are going to be listening through the archive show on prfministry.org, we just ask you to just send us some comments, send us some feedback, and if you are one of these individuals who is out now but having a tough time, just reach out to us. Let us do whatever we can do to be able to help you to live life more abundantly and get on this path to financial empowerment. So with that, we say God bless you. We'll talk to you later. And don't forget to join Kimberly Salas on Your Health is Your Wealth, which will be the first Friday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio. God bless you. Peace.
Bye-bye.